It's Wednesday, April 11th, 2018, and this is Comic Talk Today. Welcome, and thanks for listening. There's quite a bit of news I want to talk about today, but I want to apologize for not having an episode out yesterday. Work is really killing me lately, I gotta tell you. But thanks for sticking with me. Let's go on to the news.
We need to open this up a little.
DC has announced that its DC Nation book, which will be hitting for, I believe it's a quarter, coming up pretty soon, has received 1 billion orders. And that is insane. Insane. If you've been reading comics for a long time, you will know that back in the day, comics used to get 1 million orders all the time. In fact, I know that when Dan DiDio and Jim Lee talk on a panel and they're talking about the sales for the books, one of the jokes lately has become how Jim Lee, whenever they have this conversation about sales, Jim Lee's always like, well, I sold 1 million copies of X-Men. And I'm sure he says it as a joke, but this is a really big deal. And granted, this is a kind of one of my favorite things. It's almost like an anthology comic. It's going to have various stories from different popular DC creators, including Tom King, Clay Mann, Scott Snyder, James Tynion, Josh Williamson, Jorge Jimenez. Bendis is going to be doing a Superman story with Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. And I saw some of the art for that that Garcia Lopez is doing, and it looks incredible. I got to see Garcia Lopez, I believe it was at Heroes Con last year. It was him and Lee Weeks at a panel, and they were doing some live sketching as the panel was going on. And of course, there was a camera on the sketching. It was just incredible. This guy's been in the business for years, so very much looking forward to that. And it's really incredible that DC has been able to pump out 1 million copies of this book. And of course, it should be no surprise that Action 1000 is coming. In fact, Action 1000 is coming very, very soon. I believe it's next week, actually. DC Nation number 0 is going to be out May 2nd. Action number 1000 comes out April 18th, so a week from today. And that book has sold 500,000 copies. I believe that puts it at the highest DC book in quite a while. I believe the previous record holder for the last couple of years was Marvel Legacy number 1. With around 300,000 copies. So that's incredible. An incredible sales bump for DC. Super happy for them. I love the stuff that DC is doing. But you know, Marvel is no slouch either. Because they're doing some really amazing things. Including launching some new web shows? This one has me a little confused, to be honest with you. But I'm pretty sure all this is probably in preparation for the Disney streaming service that'll be launching next year that I'm sure is going to have tons of Marvel properties on it, not just the movies, but original TV series as well, not including the Netflix shows. Those will be staying at Netflix, in case anyone's wondering. But DC's launching this new digital initiative, and it's going to be 4 new web series, and they're relaunching one of their existing shows. And the first one that I saw on here was a little odd, Marvel's Eat the Universe. And it's a cooking show, somehow made to fit into the superhero genre. So I guess they can put, like, Captain America shields on their pancakes or whatever. I don't know. I don't know what this is about. But I love cooking. I love eating. If you listen to this and you ever hear me talking with Nick on the Nerd Legion podcast, we try to bring in food as much as possible into that show. And a lot of the times it becomes a joke, but cooking's awesome, man. Cooking's fun. And to have Marvel do this kind of thing is a little odd to me, but I'm happy that they're trying new things. Next up, they have Earth's Mightiest Show, which is a weekly showcase of how the Marvel Universe has extended and impacted fans around the world. I'm not sure what that's about. I don't know if they're going to be going towards, going to like shops and talking to fans. I know there's going to be some celebrity interviews, some creator interviews as well. Kind of like what DC does on their DC show on YouTube. That could be pretty cool as well. There's a Women of Marvel show, which I believe was already out at some point. Now it's going to be coming back as a bi-weekly podcast and a video show. And it's going to be talking to women that work at Marvel, how Marvel has inspired them, the kind of work that they do over there. That's pretty interesting. And then Marvel's Voices, also to be a bi-weekly series. It's going to be an interview show released as a podcast and video interview. Now, to me, it seems like a lot of these kind of are very similar. I hope that Marvel is able to try new things with some of these shows if they are trying to fill up some space for the upcoming streaming service. Because they also have This Week in Marvel, which is relaunching. That's a podcast currently. I think sometimes they put videos up on YouTube. And that deals a lot with news and books that were released, a lot of marketing stuff. And I find that really interesting that Marvel is putting so much effort in these new types of media. I know a couple episodes ago, maybe it's been a couple weeks now, I was talking about the Wolverine Stitcher original podcast that Benjamin Percy had written for Stitcher. And the problem with that is that you have to pay a monthly subscription fee for Stitcher Premium in order to access that podcast. And I think for most people that are used to listening to podcasts, are used to getting free content, even if that content is supported in some way by advertising or Patreon or donations or whatever else. But it's an interesting choice. And Marvel can do a lot because they have the marketing power of Disney behind them. Of course, they have a lot of entertainment expertise. And I hope that some of these shows go beyond just being another marketing arm for Marvel to try to market their products to fans. Because it seems to me that at least, for the most part, people that will be watching to these shows or listening to these shows are already going to be interested in what Marvel is doing. And there has to be a way for Marvel to kind of bring people aboard who aren't maybe as familiar with the properties. There's got to be some way for them to do that. And I don't see that with these shows, aside from maybe the Wolverine podcast. And I hope they find some kind of balance on that. Last bit of news I wanted to briefly discuss is that Christina Hodson has been chosen to write the script for the Batgirl movie. Batgirl movie is going to be a thing again, apparently. As we all know, Joss Whedon left the project very recently for his indiscretions, I would assume, that were revealed recently with all the Hollywood scandals. And I'm not very familiar with Christina, but apparently she is writing the Transformers spin-off movie Bumblebee, which that doesn't give me a lot of encouragement, to be honest. I'm not a huge fan of this Transformers franchise. In movie format, at least, I do enjoy the comics and the cartoons. I hope she can bring something new to the table there. She also wrote Unforgettable, which came out last year, and that movie was, to be honest, a little forgettable. It starred Rosario Dawson and Katherine Hagel. We'll see how it goes. I'm hoping that DC is able to finally make a cohesive DC movie universe. Not even in the respect that Marvel has done it, because I don't want DC to copy everything that Marvel does when Marvel is successful at it. But I do want these films to be great in their own right. And based on the stuff that I've seen from this person, I'm not sure if I have the utmost confidence that that can be accomplished. But then again, I always say, it always takes the correct project to bring something out in a creator. And I know I talked a lot about that when I talked about Gotham AD number one a couple weeks ago, because I'm generally not a huge fan of Jodie Hauser's comic work, but the stuff that she does in Gotham, Mother Panic Gotham AD, the stuff that she has done in that book is just simply amazing. And, you know, when you put the right person in the right project, it can be something special. So I do still have high hopes for the Batgirl movie, but I'm kind of holding my breath until I see something concrete coming out of it. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about this whole thing that's happening with the 99-cent trades from Marvel over at Comixology. Because I gotta tell you, I've been really enjoying watching those sales. And the way that it's been done seems a little odd. And of course, as everything else in comics, it has led to a little bit of controversy that I wanted to briefly address. So if you're not familiar, if you're not doing digital comics, Marvel has started doing, well, somebody has started doing 99-cent day of release Marvel trades. So any new trades that come out on any given Wednesday from Marvel are put up on Comixology for 99 cents. And it is not everything, and it doesn't last forever. Matter of fact, when I first saw this a few weeks ago, Nick and I were talking about this, and a few of the trades were popping up for 99 cents for like a day, and then they disappeared. And there were some other ones that were still there a few days later, but not everything that was there on the first day. Last week, or it might have been the week before, Paul and I were talking about this. And Paul and I went and looked at some trades, and he noticed that there were a couple that he had seen that morning were already gone from the 99 cent sale. So here's my understanding of how this whole thing is going. Because apparently this came up at the retailer summit the Thursday before C2E2, so last week, where there were retailers asking Marvel what the deal was with these 99 cent sales. Because here's the deal. Digital has become very big for some publishers. There's publishers who are getting like up to 50% of their sales from digital comics, or pretty close to 50%. And I'm not talking about like independent publishers or like the Comixology Submit people or anything like that. I'm talking about actual comic publishers, companies that show up on the market percentage sales figures that Diamond puts out. But of course, digital is still a smaller percentage of overall sales for the comic book industry. In fact, we never see any type of sales figures for digital comics. We only see sales numbers for physical comics. Whatever Diamond decides to release, those are the numbers that we see. Now, I'm sure that Amazon, who owns Comixology, has some great numbers on what it is that publishers are selling. And I am 100% positive that those numbers are available, because I do know a couple of people that work for publishers that have seen those numbers. And depending on who you talk to is how happy or upset they are with those numbers. Because there are companies that only do a very small percentage of total sales on Comixology, digital comic sales. But the 99 cent thing was interesting because I hadn't thought about it when I first saw the sales. But as more people began to see these sales pop up, it did cross my mind, what is it that retailers think about these flash sales, I guess you could say, since they don't last very long. And of course, that did come up in the retailer summit, like I said, and there were quite a few retailers upset, because if it was older trades, say like, you know, a year, 2, 5 year old trades, they may not have cared as much, because those books have been available to them for a good bit of time. They've been able to make some money after a certain period of time, usually within a couple of months. Hot trades aren't hot anymore, and so, you know, if they order too many, they'll kind of just sit on the shelf. But Comixology is putting these out for 99 cents the day that they come out. And of course, why would you go and spend $17.99, $19.99, or more? Because usually that's what the Marvel trades are. I believe they start at $17.99. So much higher than, I would say, most publishers. Image does a really good job with their pricing. They usually put out a lot at $9.99, at least for Volume 1. I know Valiant does that as well for Volume 1s. Then when you get to Volume 2, they'll bump up to like $14.99. And I would say $14.99 is probably a pretty fair price for a trade. Generally, you're getting between 4 to 6 issues. So if you break that down between the price of the single issues to the price of the trade, you're saving, you know, about an issue's worth of money when you purchase a trade. Of course, you have to wait several months, but that's not as bad as it used to be. You know, it used to be that indie publishers, as soon as an arc was done, they would get it ready to put out on a trade, and within a month or two of that arc finishing, or that miniseries finishing, that trade would be available. Marvel and DC used to not do that. It used to take Marvel and DC sometimes a year or more before they would put out the physical trades, because of course the bread and butter was the single issues. Now that has changed quite a little bit, and we do see some publishers putting out the Volume 1 trade or whatever volume trade even a couple of weeks after the series is finished or the arc is finished. You even see Marvel putting them out within a month or two. DC is all doing that as well. And I think that's really interesting. But how is that affecting the retailer market? I know those people listening, they're probably like, why are you talking about retailers? I don't care. I just want cheap stuff. And if that's what you want, then that's fine. But you need to understand that if the bread and butter for publishers is still sales done through a retailer, then if the retailer is not ordering, you may not see those things anymore. And there may not be retailers anymore because they don't have the additional product to sell. So that's something to think about. If you're purely digital, you might not care. And it's totally understandable as well. In fact, I would say if you're purely digital, you're saving a bunch of money because a lot of these books are going on sale within a month or two of being put out for a dollar less than cover price or even higher savings than that. And then, of course, you get the trades. Comixology is great with doing sales. They'll do 25% off, 50% off, 70% off all the time. And the thing that I've noticed within the last couple of weeks is they've added an additional incentive where if you're a Comixology Unlimited subscriber, which I am, you also get an additional 15% off. So I'm picking up some of these trades for like 84 cents. And that's just an insane amount of savings. To be able to pick up 4 to 6 issues of a book for 84 cents, you couldn't even go water box diving for that on physical books. That's something to think about. And I mean, what are you going to find in a quarter box? 10, 15, 20-year-old books. You're not going to find anything new, usually. So this was the question that came up, and Brian Hibbs, who runs Comics Experience out in, I want to say it's in L.A. It's somewhere, oh, San Francisco. Here we go. He runs a shop in San Francisco. He wrote an open letter to Marvel Comics that was published at my favorite website in the universe, which I'm not going to name because I'm being facetious. He pretty much criticized Marvel because this is cutting into their business. And one of the assumptions that he made towards the end was, well, if Marvel is going to be doing these 99-cent sales, then why should I order Marvel trades? Because nobody's going to buy them. They're going to sit on the shelf if people are buying them for 99 cents. And that's a great argument, except this was addressed at the Retailer Summit at C2E2 last week. And it was asked to C.B. Cebulski, and he pretty much said, look, we have no control over what Comixology is doing with these things. And the deals with Comixology, by the way, are a little different than the way that books are sold and purchased through Diamond. So if you have a Diamond account and you're a retailer, you're pretty much paying up front for the price of the books. So the publishers are automatically making their cut when those books are ordered and not when they're sold. Now, of course, I did bring this up a little bit ago when I was talking about the difference between newsstand editions and the direct market editions, how that market changed. Because when it was the newsstand market, publishers pretty much got paid through what you sold, not through what you ordered. With Comixology, that's actually kind of the way that it works. So the publishers send out the books to Comixology. Comixology puts the books out. Whenever a book is purchased on Comixology, that publisher gets a cut of the sale. Now, we don't know what the cut is. My assumption has always been that it's similar to the way that Apple works with iTunes, or the way that Amazon does it with other retailers, where Amazon keeps 30%, the retailer gets 70%. That's how Apple does it with music or, you know, movies that are purchased on their iTunes store. So I'm assuming somewhere around 30%. Now, that might be a little high, but maybe not. It's definitely, I would think, more than the cut that Diamond gets whenever orders are sold through their distributors. And according to C.B. Cebulski, this is not Marvel's doing. This is Comixology's doing. And that they're able to do whatever they want to do because they run the site and they're able to do those sales all the time. And that Marvel was kind of working, or at least he was going to try to find out and fix that to kind of favor retailers in some way. But that Marvel was working on getting a better arrangement for themselves, which at the same time would protect the retailers in some way, where Comixology couldn't just say, well, here's all these books for 99 cents or 59 cents or whatever. I mean, they could be selling books for a penny and Marvel would have nothing to say about it. Supposedly that's what the case was. And I saw that there was another letter written by a different comic shop owner, Mike Savage, who does Uncanny Heroes in Florida. And he pretty much went through this argument, kind of talked about what CB talked about at the Retailer Summit, and it was pretty interesting. But from the things that I hear, It seems like the truth is maybe somewhere in between. Because this has gotten out throughout the comics market, and a lot of people are talking about it. At least people who deal with retail shops, or who know people that run retail shops. And there's other publishers kind of stepping in, not speaking publicly, but kind of talking to these people on the side and saying, hey, I heard about this whole Marvel thing. What was it they said? And when it was explained to them what Marvel said, they pretty much said that none of that is true. That whenever a publisher negotiates a contract with Comixology, that the publisher has ultimate say in what sales are put out. So Comixology can go out and say, hey, I'm going to sell your entire catalog of books for 25 cents. But if the publisher disagrees, they're not going to do it. And that seems to me like something a little more fitting, something that would make more sense for the publisher to have ultimate say in what these books are selling for if they are only getting a cut of the sale when a sale is made. If Comixology were somehow saying, hey, for every 100,000 books, we'll give you $80,000 or whatever. I'm just making up a number. Then I don't see what the big deal is about running whatever the sales are because they're selling by volume and not by dollar amount. But because it does seem that the sale is by one sale, here's your percentage. So by ultimately, Comixology can't necessarily just do whatever it is that they want. Because if that were the case, then all these publishers would just take their content off Comixology. And that would be kind of bad for a lot of people that are digital only. Now, for indie books, it may not make any difference because these books are PDF or CBZs and they're all DRM free. So you can just download them, read them wherever you want. But for publishers like Marvel or DC, you can't necessarily do that. You have to do it through Comixology app because there's some code in the background that prevents people from pirating these books. Now, of course, you can still do it. I'm not going to go into how or why you would want to do it, but you could. So it seems like maybe either CB didn't know what the deal was, or Marvel is maybe being a little sketchy about it, or, even possible, Marvel has no idea. That is very possible, that Marvel had no idea that this was going on until it was brought up. Now, that's not to say that Comixology couldn't technically do whatever they wanted. Because if you go to a comic shops do sales on books all the time. There's some shops that will automatically give you discounts. In particular, if you have a pull box, right? So a lot of shops will do, if you subscribe, you have a box here where we know that you're going to have a commitment to come in and pick up these books. We'll give you 10%, 15%, 20% of your order, whatever it is. Or a lot of trades will automatically go to 25% off. I know there's one retailer, and I can't remember which one, he always has all of his trades 25% off. And the reason for that is to compete with Amazon. Because if you go to Amazon, you can buy a lot of these books for 30, 40, 50% off the cover price the day that they're released. You can pre-order them that way. And of course, what's the incentive of somebody to go to a comic shop if they have to not only travel to the place, but pay additional prices? Just wanting to support a retailer is not enough for the majority of people that read comics. So I thought that was interesting. And I don't know if we have an answer yet on what the deal is with these sales. But I gotta tell you, if you're doing digital books in whatever shape or form, I would just recommend you go and whenever you see one of these, pick up the books. Because those sales may not last much longer. Alright, so I want to talk about a couple books I'm going to pick up today. I know I still haven't done Top of the Pile last week. I've just been so busy, I haven't even finished reading all of my books. And now here we are, another comic book day later, and I have more books that I need to read. But there's three books that I wanted to briefly bring up. They're all number one books. And I hope that if you're listening to this, you're going to give these books a shot. And the first one is The Immortal Men. That's from DC's New Age of Heroes line. This is James Tynion writing, pencils by Ryan Benjamin and Jim Lee, inks by Richard Friend and Scott Williams, colors by Alex Sinclair. There's covers by Jim Lee, Alex Sinclair, and Scott Williams. And I'm very much looking forward to this. It's the secret history of the DC Universe. about a group of heroes that protected humanity since the beginning of time, but they're not really known because, of course, they hide in the shadows. And this looks really awesome. I love James Tynion IV. I think he's a fantastic writer, and I'm very much looking forward to picking this up. Of course, it's $2.99 from DC Comics. The other two that I want to recommend for today are number ones from Marvel Comics. And the first one is Domino, number one. Yes, Domino from the Deadpool books from X-Force days. And the reason I'm recommending this is it's written by Gail Simone, who is just absolutely fantastic. I think every book that she does is just pure gold. And art by David Baldion, cover by Greg Land. And yeah, it's a Domino solo book by Gail Simone. So go pick that up. I think it's going to be really good. I hope so, at least. And my last pick, if you know me, should be an automatic guess. It's an X-Men book. That's my hint. And there's a couple of X-Men that are my absolute favorite. And matter of fact, they're all women. The greatest mutant of all time is Emma Frost. You want to argue with me about that? That's fine. You're going to be wrong. Emma Frost. Number three is Magic. And number two, second greatest mutant of all time from the Age of Apocalypse days is Blink. And Blink, of course, is in the TV series that, who's putting that out? Well, I mean, Fox does it, but I can't remember what channel it's on. Anyways, Blink is in that show. The Exiles, number one, is going to be my last pick for today. And, of course, this is The Exiles with Blink as the team leader. And I can't remember what the entire team is, but I know Iron Lad is in there, which is a little weird, but that's fine. Kamala Khan is in there. The little cartoon Wolverine dude is in it. And it's, of course, led by Blink. And they're traveling through different universes trying to protect the multiverse, I guess, is the easiest way to put it. This is written by Saladin Ahmed, who just finished his run on Black Bolt, which I'm pretty sure is still my favorite Marvel book, even though it's over. The artist Javier Rodriguez, and he's got a very interesting style. In some ways, a lot of it reminds me of it's like a mixture of modern with Silver Age, and it looks really awesome. I very much look forward to checking out Exiles number one from Marvel Comics. And I think that's going to wrap it up for this episode. I want you to thank you for listening. If you want to get in touch with me at Geekvine on Twitter is the best place. Of course, you can email comictalktoday@gmail.com. And tonight, I'll be chatting up with Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler from Her Infernal Descent from Aftershock Comics coming out next week. And of course, Cable Fame, The Dregs, Coming to Me, a bunch of other awesome stuff. So that'll be out tomorrow. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.